Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. It is my privilege to welcome Jim Swanson to the show today. Jim serves as a member of the executive leadership team at Bayer as CIO and head of digital transformation for the Crop Science Division. Jim, it is such a pleasure to have you here today. I am so excited. I feel so honored because I know that you are just so crazy right now between St. Louis and Germany and everything you have going on. So I just so appreciate you being with us today.
Oh, I'm excited to be here, Lisa. Thank you. I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Good, good. Well, let's jump right in because we have a lot to talk about. Can you describe for us a little bit about what it was like growing up for you?
So I have very fortunate of two very loving parents, plus two brothers. We didn't have a lot. My mom was a school teacher. My father he fixed copy machines. But they believed in education, and they believed in hard work. And so they really instilled that in me and my two brothers. And that really stuck with me my whole life and career. So very excited about school and education, the value of that. Worked two jobs to pay for college, and so it kind of instilled in me the value of not only a good education, but working for what you believe in. And then I was fortunate. When I left college, I started with a science degree or science background in biology, and I really enjoyed science. My plan was to go and get a PhD, but I wanted to work for a couple of years, one, because I wanted to make some money, and two, I wanted to kind of learn the industry before I went back to school. And I started at a pharmaceutical company, which is now GlaxoSmithKline. I started as a bench scientist doing monoclonal antibody research. And the neat thing about science is you inevitably end up doing a lot of technology. So we were doing robotics, so I was programming robots. We were doing analytics, so I was writing algorithms to crunch the data. We were doing instrumentation, so you had to learn how to program those. And we were building databases so we can collect all the data. And I did that for about 2 years. And the IT group came to me and said, so you're doing all this IT work. Why don't you try IT for a while? And I kind of laughed. I talked to my boss at the time. And he said, why don't you go do this? Get it out of your system. You'll come back because you really are a scientist. And you'll go and finish your PhD. And, you know, your career will go off that way. Well, 20 years later or some odd, what I found was so neat about the technology and science mix is this idea that you can bring innovative science with technology and solve really big problems. And I've always loved being in science and IP-based companies. And when I left the labs to go work in IT, I actually saw more science than when I was in the lab itself, because now you're trying to automate and create capabilities across a number of different labs or scientific disciplines. And I was fortunate to be able to work at a couple of big pharma companies, GSK, Johnson & Johnson, Merck, that really got me to see much more than just the R&D side of it. I actually worked on the commercial side. I worked on the business side, and always around this mix of science, IP, and technology. And that really shaped me. And I actually did go back to school to get a graduate degree, and that was in computer science. And my whole career, even moving to Monsanto and now to Bayer, has always been these science IP-based companies where you can invent, you can transform, you can bring technology and data to deliver new insights. And those are the things that I get energized about. I've never had a boring day at my job in 20-some-odd years, and I've been able to progress in things that I love doing. And so for me, it's this passion of bringing these things together for really big outcomes. And it used to be human health. Then it was agriculture, so plant health, but also it's good for humans. But now this combination again with Bayer of human health, plant health, consumer health, and helping them to digitally transform is a lot of fun.
That is just so amazing, because you probably didn't even think about being a CIO, did you, back when you were a bench scientist? I mean, it wasn't even on your radar.
No, not at all. I mean, if you would have asked me 5 years ago that I'd be living in the Midwest for an agricultural company, I would have bet you $1 million and you would have been $1 million richer, because I could have never forecasted that. But one of the things I learned throughout my career is keep your options open and look for every opportunity that advances the things you want to do or the things you're passionate about. And I learned from one of my mentors many years ago, he never looked at a job description. He always wrote his job description, then he looked for companies or jobs that would fulfill that. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was really insightful for me, because it allowed me to think more broadly around what is possible. I couldn't have forecasted agriculture, but the neat thing about it was there's a tremendous amount of science. It has a real big need for technology. It's an industry that's been around for thousands of years that's going through a huge transformation. And what better place to be at the forefront of an industry that's so critical to human population and to the planet, we think about sustainability, mm-hmm. and having a significant impact to it. So for me, it was not about moving to St. Louis or ag. It was about, this is a tremendous opportunity to learn more, to take what I love and do that in another setting. And now with Bayer, I get to do it again, mm-hmm. And even a broader setting. So for those reasons, having that kind of mindset has opened me up to more opportunities than I would have ever imagined. And that's taken me down paths that have been really exciting.
Well, I love what you just said, because I think really you saw a bigger purpose too in what you were doing with ag. And I've always loved the mission of Monsanto, because the mission was to feed the world. And what better mission could there be, really? And I know that when you came to Monsanto, so let's talk about that. Well, I want to back up 1 minute and just talk a little bit. Now, as a young boy, did you do science experiments and that sort of thing? Was science interesting to you, Jim, even as a young boy?
I had your basic chemistry set. I didn't burn the house down, so that was probably a good thing. But I wouldn't say I was over the top. I actually started to be an engineer, was where I was going to go when I started college. What I realized was it was a mix of technology and engineering, and then I found this passion around science, and I started to really enjoy that more. But I wasn't exactly certain what areas of science that I'd want to be in or how far I'd advance it. And that's why I kind of wanted, after I got my undergraduate degree, wanted to work for a couple of years to really see how well I fit. Now, the good thing about the college I went to, they had co-op programs, so I got some good experience mm-hmm. through those that kind of gave me my first entry point into my first job. And then working in the labs, I really enjoyed it, but I really enjoyed this technology side of it, and I gravitated towards it, mm-hmm. this combination. And then back to your point around mission, that's also super important to me. I want to work for companies that actually have a mission for a greater good. Mm-hmm. I want to work with really bright people, because I learned that way. I want to work in companies that really push the envelope of innovation, because that's fun for me, and opportunities that you can transform. Every company and role I've been in, I've had some aspect of those opportunities, but I've also been able to shape it and develop it. I know when I came to Monsanto, they probably had a traditional vision of what the CIO was, and I had my own vision, because I wrote the job description of what I think I wanted.
Yes.
And I was fortunate enough to work with a really great number of executive team members, including my boss at the time, the head of strategy. And that was also something that was neat. I came into Monsanto as part of the strategy team, thinking about the next 10 or 15 or 20 years of the company, not the next 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to be at the business table to influence the future of the company, having the technology background to drive some dialogues, and really learning that business was mm-hmm. another level of understanding I didn't have coming in. But again, areas I wanted to develop mm-hmm. in, and it really worked out really well.
Well, you got your arms around it pretty quickly, because I know that when you and I first met, you had not been here that long. And I remember you talking to me about taking Monsanto through, I believe there was something like 29 major digital transformations. And I know that you guys had just bought Climate, correct? And tell us a little bit about that. What were you buying? I mean, I know what you were buying, but I want our listening audience to understand what you guys were actually buying with Climate.
It's a good comment. And, you know, it's funny, when I left the pharma world to come into ag, I couldn't tell the difference between a soybean seed, a carrot seed, or a corn seed. So that's how bad it was. So I had to learn a lot around the business. And even stepping into a John Deere tractor is an amazing experience because of the technology that's embedded in mm-hmm. one of those combines. When I joined, we had just announced our acquisition of Climate. Mm-hmm. And that's a startup in Silicon Valley. And they were doing hyper-local weather monitoring. And you think about one of the biggest variations in agriculture is actually weather. And so the more that you can predict weather, the better that you can actually think about your agronomic practices around it. And they actually had an insurance business as well. And the idea was we can better predict weather, we can get better accuracy insurance. So for farmers, it saved them money, but actually have more predictability. And so when I joined, we had just announced that acquisition, and I came in to really help drive a digital transformation for Monsanto as an ag company. And what was neat bringing the two of us together, the Climate Corporation and me coming into ag, is we didn't have the burden of history. We had the, I don't know, so I get to ask the wonderful stupid questions, as I call it, and be able to think very differently than how maybe traditional people that grew up in that industry. And I remember joining, our head of HR said, you know, we normally don't hire executives into Monsanto. They usually fail. And I said, well, thanks for that vote of confidence. But let's look at this together and see how we can actually do this transformation. And so Climate coming in with a lot of more modern, agile DevOps type of skills, me coming in, reimagining what ag could be, and then looking at how IT could be not just an enabler, can be a shaper. How do we reshape agriculture through technology, data, and data science? And I was fortunate, we had some pockets of excellence in our R&D group. And so we started to say, how do we scale that? How do we take that thinking around data science and engineering and APIs and apply that into product supply, into commercial? How do we couple that with our climate platform, which has was starting to develop a lot of grower insights? So we had our internal engine we wanted to digitize. We had this external engine that was on the farm that had good insights and data, and start bringing those together to reshape what we think agricultural could be, not just drive operating efficiencies. And I think that was an important element. We didn't want to just incrementally improve on the edges. We wanted to transform. Mm-hmm. And we have the same mission now as we brought Monsanto and Bayer together. How do you transform an industry? And we have three big buckets for that. We have innovation, so constantly delivering new innovation to the farm, whether that be in seeds or traits or chemistries or biologics. We have sustainability. How do we do this not only environmentally sustainable ways, but also grower sustainability and make sure they're profitable so they can continue to grow their business? Mm-hmm. And the third element is digital. How do we apply digital and data to actually help a grower be more effective? And you combine those three things into something we call tailored solutions that allows us to be hyper-personal with that grower and their particular farm with particular insights that are valuable to them. That will transform agriculture and achieve our goals and missions for the company in a really a sustainable way. So those are great opportunities where we put it together. And we kind of used climate and some of us coming in new that we transformed IT to kind of be the kernel to kind of help the bigger company transform. And I feel like we're doing it again. Mm-hmm. Bayer bought us for a big price tag. But how do we now help Bayer transform digitally, not just in agriculture, but also in pharma and consumer, which they're also big into, and you think about the value of that could be quite quite powerful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that's going to be a big job. That's going to be a big job. But you're taking what you have learned for ag, right? And you're going to help them with pharma and with their consumer products and that sort of thing as well, right?
Yeah, kind of funny. I feel like I've come full circle. I was in pharma. And
That's right.
I was at J&J, we had a medical device division, consumer division, and I'm kind of coming full circle back again, which is kind of neat. So I get to leverage a lot of my pharma background, but also my ag background. And when I was at Merck and J&J, we had a consumer business. Seeing those insights now from a different lens is quite powerful. And the support we have from the executive team, so the group CEO of Bayer, the divisional CEOs, I sit on the executive team for Crop Science, and it's a great team, a great people, great leaders, and half of them were legacy of Monsanto, half of them were legacy Bayer, and we get to reshape you know, the largest and more important industry on the planet. And that
it's going to be amazing.
You get that opportunity once in your life, and so that's why I was super excited to be asked to join the company. But then also, how do we help our other parts, pharma, consumer, also think broadly, and there's some really strong leadership there as well. How do we accelerate them through some of the experiences we've had, the good learnings that we, you know, the mistakes we might have made, but also the really good things we took advantage of and do that more holistically. And so that's the opportunity for us.
Very good. Well, let's talk a little bit about, we touched on digital transformation. I would love to hear, because that's a buzzword out there. Every company knows they need to be digital. Why is that, for one thing? Secondly, how do you define digital transformation, Jim? Because everybody seems to have a different definition, but how do you guys define it at Bayer?
So I was just with our CEOs this morning. We created something called the Digital Executive Council. So how do we look holistically around digital to help the company transform? And I start with, this is not about IT transformation, it's about business transformation. Mm-hmm. So if we want to transform our business, this is a critical element of that transformation. So really trying to frame in that light. So it's not just about what tools you deliver, but think about your skill set of your organization holistically. We do anchor it based on outcomes, things our business cares about. So it may be our pipeline. What's the NPV of the pipeline and how do we enhance that NPV? Because that's how the company is actually measured and valued, is based on what's coming in that pipeline in IP-based companies. If it's in supply chain, we look at things like, how do I dramatically improve cost of goods? Because that's a right bottom line impact, or perfect order. So if I can improve perfect order, I get higher customer satisfaction, and I actually make a frictionless environment for my customers to work with me on. If I'm thinking about the customer commercial side, it could be things like revenue share, revenue lift, or net promoter score. And so how do we work with our customers? If they value that interaction, the net promoter score goes up. So that's their assessment of us as a company, and would they promote us to other companies? And then we think about transforming agricultural things like digital agriculture, so we can provide advisors to farmers in the field. And does that allow them to increase their outputs while reducing their input and lower their costs? So you can't do that just with traditional processes. You need the components of digital and digital transformation to enable that. You don't do all those changes just by digital itself, but it's a critical enabler to it. And as we try to frame it, we then say, what's the skill set we need of the future? What's the reimagination of the business processes you can have? So I define digital with five components. One, it's customer interaction and customer value. So always thinking about how you're interacting with the customers with real-time information, real-time feedback. Mm-hmm. Can you reimagine your products and services through data and insights and digital? So whole new service offerings like digital agronomic tools, or enhancing my products because I have a better value pack or information pack with that seed or how that's being grown in the ground, et cetera. So that's a component of it. Third is automation. So how do I think about enhancing or accelerating what I do through automation? You could be chatbots, it could be RPA, it could be automation of your supply chain, IoT. Fourth area is around new business models. Can I reimagine new business models or new business opportunities? And I'll give you an example of that in ag. We're working towards something that comes outcomes-based pricing. Normally, we'll sell a jug of chemistry or a bag of seed. What if I sold an outcome to you? As a farmer, I'm going to share a risk with you. I know as much about your farm. I know the genetics and the seed. I know what the chemistries do. I know the weather. I know the topology of your soil. What if I revenue share with you that if I increase your yield, we share in that positive. If it decreases, you don't owe me anything. And so you think about transforming your business model, about how you go to market, and that changes everything. It changes your pipeline. Mm-hmm. It changes your supply chain. It changes your commercial. And the fifth area is people. How do I build the skill set in people that could be digital acumen or digital fluency? We do some coursework on that. Or using data and insights to be more predictive in the decisions versus a set of heuristics, because I've been in the company a long time. I know how things work. How do I go from rearview mirror to foreview? So those are the five elements. And the next center of the ring is the enablers, so things like data science, automation, technology. What are the tools? Mm-hmm. And then in the absolute center, I draw a picture of leadership and culture. So if we haven't transformed the company and the leadership and the culture, none of this works. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of companies do digital for operational efficiencies. There's nothing wrong with that. A lot of companies do that. They save millions of dollars, all really good. But there's another turn of the crank around business transformation that includes operational excellence, but can you reimagine your business and transform it? And not many companies do that. And that's where I get super excited, because I think the opportunities are huge. If you tie it to the business outcomes they care about, you get them on board, and then you do iterative learning. You build a learning culture to evolve your thinking regularly. You could transform a company. And so we did it in Monsanto. We're doing it again in Bayer. And that's a journey that not many are willing to take, because it takes courage, and there's definitely mistakes along the way.
Yes.
But if you can master it, your company can excel. So that's how I would define it and some of the attributes I would give to it.
Very good. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Jim Swanson.
Hey, everybody. This is Brian Muncy, and I'm the executive producer of the Something Extra podcast. Now, I know you're listening to this show and thinking, wow, this podcast thing seems to be taking off. How do I get started with my own podcast? If you aren't thinking that, you should be. Podcasts are one of the most disruptive new ways to reach your audience, and businesses of all sizes are taking note. If you want to get ahead of the curve or just want to explore some ways podcasting can meet your business goals, reach out to me and email podcast@technologypartners.net. I'd love to help.
So, Jim, Your fifth component of digital transformation was all about people. So I wanted to spend a little bit of time on that because obviously organizations are made up of people, and people is a very critical component. So for those companies out there that are wanting to digitally transform, what have you done with your people? How can you get them to think more digitally? And you kind of talked about some coursework and things that you take people through, but I'd love for you to expound on that a little bit.
Yeah, so if you put the frame of digital transformation being a business transformation, this clearly means it's more than just the IT skill set. We did focus on that. So we had a look at what are the core IT skills that we need for the future. A software engineer, a data steward,
data
a product, a customer success manager, different skills maybe that a traditional IT organization would have, but I think are really key and critical, but that's not enough. We had to look holistically around the company. What's the skills we needed to embed into a marketer, into a process engineer, into an R&D scientist, a procurement or finance person that could take advantage of reimagining those processes through data, through models that might be more predictive, through automation to free up time. And so we started with a cohort of what I would call digitally native employees already in Monsanto when we started. There's people that kind of got it, that were living it every day. And so we created a curriculum with them, and we asked them to be sounding boards. So I worked with our head of HR and talent management to pull together content that we thought would be relevant to a broad workforce. And then we used a cohort of about 40 people from different aspects of the company, finance, R&D, supply chain, commercial, legal, et cetera. And we said, you guys are already there, but you're our sounding board to refine and refresh. Does this resonate with you? Does this, you know, does this make any sense? How do we clean it up? And we started the course calling it digital fluency, with the idea that more the people felt comfortable living in this world, the more that not only they embrace it, but they can actually accelerate it. So we went through our first cohort. It was about a five-week program. We took them through a day a week and different materials. We brought in some external speakers from MIT and a few other places. And it was neat when we got through that five-week journey to say, how was it? So we asked for really brutal feedback. And they gave us feedback around some of the content. We need more examples to demonstrate. We have to go from buzzwords to actual action. But then as a group on their own, they said, one big change we want to make, let's not call it digital fluency. Let's call it digital leadership, because we want to lead in this space, and we want people to feel that by being part of this capability, they're actually going to not only lead the company, but they're going to lead in their careers, which I thought it was great.
That's awesome.
I couldn't have come up with that on my own, but the group did. And so we continue to take that feedback and then build on it. And with that, we looked at some core competencies that we know we needed, like data science or data engineers. And so we built some curriculum in tools like Coursera, in DataCamp, in Software Carpentry that gave some basic skills. Mm-hmm. It also gave advanced skills. And what you could actually do is you could actually get almost micro-certifications, and you could build up your skill base over time. And we were also very clear as what does a good data scientist look like from an expert? And how do you start to differentiate? So, you know, the funny thing was when we started talking about data science, all of a sudden we happened to have 3,000 data scientists in the organization, all thinking they were going to get a 30% pay rise. And they said, no, this is the kind of skill set you need. Let's really assess against that. And if you aspire to this, this is what it's really going to take. And so that kind of leveled the playing field a bit. But we used our own people to kind of build out those curriculums. Mm-hmm. We saw it was valuable, so we did more of it. Other things that weren't as valuable, we did less of it. And we now literally have hundreds of courses that thousands of hours are going and people taking those courses at their own time, because we've been very declarative of what does a digital company require. We highlight it with executive support, the importance for the company. We realize people are developing their skill sets in a way that they become highly marketable. And what I've seen in my multiple companies and career is when you feel you're highly marketable, you have a set of confidence, you feel empowered. When you feel your skill sets are lagging, you kind of protect what you do and you feel somewhat victimized. So how do you pivot an organization from being a victim to empowered? How do you get the most potential out of people because they're constantly learning and shaping thinking? And they then get a degree of confidence that no matter what happens with them in their career, in their company, what have you, they can move forward. And it's liberating to the individual. Our challenge then is, are we creating an environment that they want to stay? So that's always my mantra when I say to my organization, I want to do two things. I want you to be highly marketable such that headhunters are calling you, which is weird for a CIO to say. But the second part of that is, I want to have an environment where you're not going to learn any faster than you learn here. We're doing leading edge technology, leading edge thinking. We're shaping, we're doing big, bolder moves that have dramatic impact. If you could find a company that does it better than we do, go to it. But we're going to keep an environment where you're going to be leading in thinking. And so that has been a good rallying cry.
That's awesome.
It also becomes an attractor of talent.
Mm-hmm.
We have a small group of amazing data scientists that came from the locomotive industry, and they're doing simulations for us that are saving us hundreds of millions of dollars in our supply chain by taking things they learned in a different industry and now applying it to factories we build, apply it to logistics we're planning. And we couldn't have forecasted that, but by creating this environment, my data scientists engaged with other data scientists, and they got excited about what we're doing, and they came to us in a group that's highly sought after in St. Louis, which is not a big, mm-hmm. Draw. It's mm-hmm. not a big city, but the type of work that we were doing became very attractive. And so if we can do that well, we can really stay ahead of our competition and really do transformational things.
I love that. I really love that. And that is not what you would hear most CIOs say. I want you to be very marketable because they don't want to lose their people. But I'm sure because of what you're doing, those people, and empowering them like that, Jim, they want to stay. So the engagement, the excitement about what they're doing probably goes way up,
yep.
And
even with
imagine.
Our big acquisition with Bayer, there's another opportunity. So I get to work now in two cultures, in Germany as well as the U.S. And there is a tremendous appetite to continue that journey. There is a lot of good talent and skill set. We operate differently just because of different, mindset or processes. But underpinning all this, people want to add value. And they, mm-hmm. they want to feel valuable. And they want to feel that their skills are really needed in the corporation. And so the more that we declare that, the more they can align. This is what I want to do. And some are going to opt out because it's not for them. But for those that want to align there, they have a real call to action. So that's also been fun part of this journey so far and kind of shaping a whole new company.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. That's just so exciting. So let's talk a little bit about, I just want you to touch on real quickly some of those disruptive technologies that everybody in our listening audience needs to pay attention to and figure out, how they can possibly use some of those in their businesses.
I kind of start with my technology wedding cake, if you will. And there's four components to it. There's infrastructure, which is I call my foundation, my digital foundation. So your networking infrastructure, cloud compute, your security. The second layer is data. So how do you unlock the value of data for the corporation through microservices and APIs and modern data repositories? Third layer is platforms. So how do you move from stovepiped applications to horizontal platforms that go across a company? Because decisions are made horizontally. They're not made vertically. So how do you think about workflows and platforms that go across multiple functional domains?
Mm-hmm.
And the fifth area is data science. So how do we apply data science thinking and embed it into workflows, leveraging data that actually is how somebody works every day? So there's technologies in each one of those stacks
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that become super important. Obviously, in the foundation space, being able to be in cloud compute, software-defined networks, we're moving petabytes of data all over the world, and having the ability to scale that compute power as well as the networks is super critical. Otherwise, you end up limiting your opportunities. You think about the data layer, Kafka, for example, for doing real-time streaming of data. We have every data repository you can imagine, everything from the traditional relational databases to big data and Hadoop databases to NoSQL to graph databases. We don't try to force fit everything into one place.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, we extract a layer with microservices and APIs that you can call any of those data sets. And we do literally millions of API calls every day. And that's how I measure data consumption. So we're training our developers and data scientists to call an API, which then allows them to get to the data. And then we have real-time streamed data through IoT mm-hmm. from our sensors. We mm-hmm. have trucks loaded with information. We have our shop floors have IoT. We have sensors on bags. We look at distribution logistics. So thinking about data and technologies that allows us to pull that together, but then extract it or abstract it out through microservices and APIs. At the platform layer, we have a mix. We have some standard commercial offerings, whether it be Salesforce in our CRM space, whether it be SAP mm-hmm. for ERP, et cetera. But we also have bespoke things we've developed, something called our Velocity platform. That's all modern technology that we built for our R&D engine to move products from conception all the way through to the manufacturing process, all the way to the farm gate. And even there, we do over 1 billion simulations of genetics to phenotype before we put a single seed in the ground. Every seed is geolocated. So every single research seed we plant every year, which is over a couple million, has a GPS coordinate. And we use imaging data, we use a number of other things, IoT, to be able to collect that. And then on the data science side, we have repositories, something called Domino. We use both internal developed models plus externally available solutions, like a company called Data Robot, which allows you to democratize data science for the masses without having to be a data scientist to run it. And so we have a mix there as well of thinking of technology, but we try to look at the outside world regularly. Mm-hmm. How do we bring those insights inside? Mm-hmm. And then how do we build it on core platforms that allows us to extend and scale? So we're always bringing new ideas in. Mm-hmm. And those that work, we scale them. Those that don't, good experience, we shut them down, but we've learned something.
Right.
You know, we're doing a whole bunch of things with blockchain right now. Revenue protection and revenue lift to track and trace of our products around the world to product stewardship. We're still learning how to best apply that, but working with third parties, working with some of our partners in the industry to kind of build those things out. And as that technology matures, we'll be better ahead to be able to how to leverage it and where to leverage it. And so there's not one answer, but there's a whole series of things that we try to apply. And the last point I'll make around data science, and Lisa, you and I were talking about it, data science has been around for 50 years. It's
right.
not in itself is a new concept.
Sure.
But what has changed is the emergence of GPUs so you can quickly scale. We had one run that took 40,000 GPU cores. And you're not going to, I don't care how big your high-performance computing is, you're never going to scale up for that. And so we needed that compute power to be able to do that. And the second big change is data. There's more data available now. It's become the new currency. Mm-hmm. It's the new fuel. The new fuel for the engine,
right.
without question. You never had the amount of data we had now. Mm-hmm. So that combination of compute power plus richness and depth of data with data science applied to a domain, that's a game changer for any company. Even if you don't have data scientists, you got to figure out how do you leverage data science companies mm-hmm. to be able to bring insight into your company. And then based on that value, how do you start growing that core internally? Mm-hmm. So those are all some of the changes that we've looked at, some that we've applied. But it was all based in this four-layer stack because you had to have all four of those. Without one of those four, you can't achieve what I've talked about.
Right.
So we've been focusing on all four and applying the right technologies to enable it.
Well, it's exciting for any company out there. The amount of data is more than we've ever seen, but getting the right insights from that data so that you can make better decisions for your organization going forward, it's critical. It's something you have to look at.
Absolutely.
As a company.
Even how you think about your partnership strategy for data.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing coming back into a multi-divisional company again. Within Bayer Crop Science, we have richness of data in genetics and what we actually do in our research plants and we see in the field. So we have a bolus of data we can pull from to run our models. If you're in pharma, it's a mix. You have your clinical study data, plus there's something called real-world evidence data out in the on the real world around you know, patients on certain formulations. You have to merge that data to get insights. And then if you're in a consumer space, unless you're a company like Amazon, you've got to figure out how you partner for that data and then how do you build insights off of that.
Mm-hmm.
So your data strategy is going to vary based on the company and division you're in and how you want to run it, but you have to have a data strategy.
But you have to have one.
Have to have one. And
right.
then you got to have the data science to enable it, and then you got to embed that in somebody's workflow. I can't go to a sales rep and say, go run a model that will better predict what customers you should go talk to. They'll never do it. But if I embed the model into their account plan that happens to sit in the Salesforce.com platform, it's already as part of their workflow. And so now they're actually leveraging data science right when they go talk to that customer, where before it was based on their heuristics about who they want to see when. So that's the sweet spot you
need to find. That's exciting. It is exciting, isn't it? I mean, because it really, truly can transform a business and how they go forward. So let's talk real quickly, because this is called Something Extra. You are now in a German-based company, Bayer. Talk to us a little bit about what you have seen as the cultural difference. And then let's talk about what has been that Something Extra that you have had to employ, both from Monsanto as well as now at Bayer.
Yeah, this is the first time I've been in a German headquartered company. I've always been multinational companies. And there is some stereotypes. You know, they're more process-driven as a European headquartered company, whereas a U.S. headquartered company would be more about maybe less process, but, you know, just go after it and we'll learn as we go.
Mm-hmm.
But if below the stereotypes, people are people. They want to feel that there's a good strategy, what they're enabling. They want to feel they're part of that strategy. And how do you take the best of both worlds? And we kind of joke when we're bringing the two companies together, my German colleagues would say, we're on the Autobahn. And as you know, there's no speed limit on the Autobahn. We will have mapped out every kilometer. We'll know exactly where the off-ramp is, and we know when we're going to get there and when we're going to get off. And so that's all planned. Whereas Legacy Monsanto, we're on the Autobahn. It's 130 miles an hour. I'm just going to get in the car and go. If I miss the off-ramp, I'll turn around.
Right.
And so there's a lot of value in both of that thinking. Monsanto could do with a little more process planning, and German company could do a little more of we have a directional view. Let's go after it without analyzing it. So to an excruciating degree. So as we bring these cultures together, this openness and this camaraderie around how do you build the best of both cultures to get the best outcome. And that's part of the fun, I think, as well, going through that learning process. Now, about the something extra, I would say I'm a heavily influenced role. When you want to do digital transformation, you're never going to own all the resources. You're not going to own the people. I'm not the CEO of any division that has ultimate authority. But you have to be able to influence in a way that they will understand it and want to get on board with you. And I kind of joke with my people all the time, if I'm the only one talking about digital transformation, I failed. I'm going to have no followership. I haven't been embedded any of that into their thinking. I failed. But if my words are in their mouth, then we've influenced. We've gotten them to a point where, hey, we're on this journey together, and how do we solve these big problems? And so that influencing skill set, I've had to work a lot of years. Even now, I still have a lot to do. I was still learning. And I would say coming into a German headquartered company was a order of magnitude around how do you influence from a very different culture and perspective. So, but that has been something I've been really focusing on, because once you influence, it's amazing to me, once you ignite people's inspiration, what they can do. I was in Brazil recently, and we started some of our supply chain strategy, something we call Connect Supply Chain, 4 or 5 years ago. And the idea was to connect every part of our supply chain, whether it be trucks in the field, our equipment in a plant, a shipment to a distributor, or what appears in the farm gate. And we started with a little sensor in the back of a truck, and we were able to track it, and we were able to reduce loss of seed due to overheating of a truck. And we put some simple tools together in an iPad for a plant manager. Well, I went to Brazil probably about 6 months ago. Where they've taken it today, I can't even imagine. I couldn't have imagined it 4 or 5 years ago, how connected they are, how many models they've applied, from everything to logistics planning, to safety stock allocation, to S&OP processes. And it wasn't the IT group. It was we've unlocked the power of the organization to think very differently. And we gave them some examples of how it could work quickly with some credibility. It wasn't just PowerPoint slides. And then they just accelerate it. So if we can influence that.
The possibilities are endless.
They're endless. They're absolutely endless. And I think that's, I don't care if you're an IT leader, a finance leader, a CEO, that's what leadership needs to be. It needs to be able to influence and unlock the power and potential of every employee in the organization. And that's a journey that we should all be on.
And as you said, we need to continually be learning, right? And improving that skill set, right? Of being able to influence.
Yeah, I kind of joke, and I'm going to date myself a little bit. I got my master's in computer science in 1998. Now, my daughters would joke at me and say, Dad, did the internet exist back then? I said, yes, it existed in 1998.
Barely.
But you think about the technology today, if you weren't continually learning, you'd be obsolete within the first year.
Absolutely.
It's changing that rapidly. And that's not just for the IT professionals. That's every
anyone.
Professional. And so how do you build a continuing learning organization where you're never satisfied? And that's one of the learnings also is...
Never get satisfied.
And if you're doing a job that you could do in your sleep, it's time to do something else because you're not learning, you're not growing. You should have a little bit of queasiness when you take on a role, not to the point of nausea, but to the point,
a little uncomfortable
that allows you to kind of, hey, I'm learning something different here, or I can influence something, or I can get a different perspective. And I think that's how you stay current and relevant.
That is just perfect advice. So let's talk a little bit about diversity and inclusion, Jim. You and I have talked about this, and we both believe that when you have a diversity of people, you're going to come up with a much better solution. And so I know that this is something you're very passionate about, and you have 3 daughters yourself. So as you think about that for the future, what is it that you're hoping for them, and where do you think that we need to go with the diversity and inclusion?
Yeah, it's a great question, Lisa. And certainly I'm super focused about women and women leadership because, like as you said, I have 3 daughters who are really bright. 2 are going to be engineers. 1's going to be a lawyer, and I'm really super proud of them. But I also think more broadly around diversity and inclusion, it's diversity of thought, diversity of experiences, ethnicity, you know, background, et cetera. And I think in my experience over the 20-some-odd years I've been working in different companies, our best ideas have come by pulling together very different mindsets with different skill sets and capabilities. And where my weaknesses are, somebody else can fill that with their strength. I want to make sure whatever problem you have, you kind of look around the table. And ask yourself, how diverse is this table around me to inform me of that problem, that situation, or that opportunity? And if it's not, go out of your way to create some diversity in all aspects, because the value there far outweighs the effort it takes to actually make sure you got a diverse mindset around you. But you're also sending a signal to your company and to your organization how much importance that is for you and for your company and that value. And every leader needs to do that and represent it. And I think with that, you'd be amazed with the level of productivity and value that creates.
Jim, thank you so much. This has just been such a pleasure. I've just enjoyed our time together.
Thank you, Lisa. It was really great talking to you. As always, I love your energy and I love you do this. This is really great.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2018. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit lisagailnichols.com/somethingextra. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen.